Before Moses and the fickle Israelites wandered for 40 years in the wilderness, before Moses received the Ten Commandments, before the Red Sea parted and the Israelites barely made it to the other side, before Moses wore Pharaoh down and out with awful plagues, and before Moses beheld the presence of God in the burning bush, Moses was a shepherd, tending the flocks of his father-in-law Jethro. And as Moses led that flock through the wilderness in search of greener pastures, he had no way of knowing that he himself was the one being led. The journey took him west to the great Mount of Horeb, which towered over the surrounding landscape. And for some reason, Moses felt compelled to climb it. And when he reached that cloud-shrouded summit, he saw something the likes of which he had never seen before. More about Moses later. There's a class at Harvard that teaches students how to see. Now, lest you think that that is a course on par with underwater basket weaving, which guys in the athletic department take, this is a class in teaching the students to see things that are hidden in plain sight. Stilgo's class begins with having the students look at a series of familiar images that they think they have seen. And one example is the FedEx emblem, which you see before you. Did you know that embedded in that logo is a symbol? I want you to look at it. Don't tell anyone that you found it. Now, can someone, I'd like to see the hands of people who, for whatever reason, don't see it, and that's okay. The first time I looked, I didn't see it either. How many don't see it? Concentrate on the white space between E and X, and what do you see? An arrow. And yet, we see that thing every day as we drive around town, and we see FedEx, no arrow. But what's interesting is when Professor Stilgo shows this logo to toddlers and asks them what they see, the majority of them see the arrow without even being prompted. And Stilgo says the reason we do not see that is because of the way we have been educated. Because our way of learning is based almost solely upon letters and numbers, and not symbols and pictures. And the ways of knowing which come as standard equipment with each one of us, he says, have been educated out of us. And I love this statement. He says, the finest students in the world are at Harvard, but most of them are visual illiterates. Oh, would you ever stop and think about the things that cross your path every day that you hardly notice? We miss so much because we have been conditioned to see other things. And it's hard to see when our lives just blow right by things at breakneck speed. A lady named Brenda Sampson wrote a poem about this that she's entitled, If I Really Opened My Eyes. If I opened my eyes and looked and saw, really saw, then what would I see? Not just the flash of a tree that I rush past, but colors red, russet, and gold, leaves lined and sacred, crushed and broken, not one of them perfect, yet every one in perfect symmetry. Its imperfection and its beauty. Have you ever just sat and looked at a leaf and looked at all the capillaries and all the intricacies of that creation of God. There's a writer named Annie Dillard who has this amazing gift of observation. What seems to us to be ordinary and everyday, in that she can see other worlds. She peers beneath surfaces, beneath people and places and events, and finds a world that is crammed full of beauty and of God. And she says, beauty and grace are performed whether or not we will see them. And the least we can do is try to be there so that creation need not play to an empty house. It's a wonderful image. The Irish Christians express it this way. They said, in our seeking after God, nothing is too common to be exalted, and nothing is so exalted that it cannot be made common. Now, I want you to concentrate on another awareness exercise, and I want you to do exactly what it instructs you to do.
The monkey business illusion. Turn it up. Count how many times the players wearing white pass the ball. The correct answer is 16 passes. Did you spot the gorilla? For people who haven't seen or heard about a video like this before, about half missed the gorilla. If you knew about the gorilla, you probably saw it. But did you notice the curtain changing color or the player on the black team leaving the game? Let's rewind and watch it again. Here comes the gorilla, and there goes a player, and the curtain is changing from red to gold.
Okay,
when you're looking for a gorilla, you often miss other unexpected events. And that's the monkey business.
Now, before I ask for a show of hands, I will tell you that I did not see the gorilla. So, the hands of those who did not see the gorilla or the girl leaving or the gold changing color. How many of you didn't see it? Wow, that's more than half. How many of you did see it? I showed it to my wife and she spotted the thing right away. It's not saying you are right or wrong. It's not saying you are a success or failure. It's simply a matter of what you see. You see, what we see is what we are told to see and what we are supposed to see. And yes, even what we want to see. And the Christian mystics tell us that we are immersed in a spiritual realm, just like a fish is surrounded by water or a bird in flight is surrounded by the air. The Christian mystic said the world is not divided up into these categories, which we so often do, because they said reality is one. There is not a material world over here, and there is not a spiritual world over here, or if you choose, up there. The spiritual realm does not exist in some unfathomable place in some seventh heaven. And our Hebrew ancestors were pretty much the same. They did not split reality into material and spiritual. They believed that the world we know with our senses is the same world we long for with our spirits, and those two worlds are inseparable and they are intertwined. Into 14th century, there was a Christian mystic named Julian of Norwich, and she had this wonderful quote. She said, "All the way to heaven is heaven." Think about that. It's not putting heaven down here. It's saying right now we can begin to see and we can begin to experience the realities of heaven all through our lives, all the way to heaven. Or if I may bring the Irish back into the equation, they said, heaven lies a foot and a half above the height of a man. Choose whatever image you want. Now let's get back to the summit. Moses is catching his breath after a long climb. And as he's trying to catch his breath and acclimate to the altitude, he sees something really weird. It's a bush on fire, but not just any bush. This one's got an angel in it. And Exodus says he looked at it. It says he saw it. But then, in the next sentence, it says he looked at it. He said, "I must turn aside to see this great sight." And the focus there is upon turn aside. It means more than do a double take. It means that in turning aside, Moses took a deeper look. And it was when God saw Moses looking that God said, "Moses, Moses." And it got his attention. "Take off your shoes. This is holy ground. I am your father's God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." He looked, but then he turned aside and he really looked. And then came a voice, and then came a mission. "Moses, deliver my people, Israel." You know, Jesus was in the business of helping people turn aside. And the way he did that was by telling parables. Parables are these little pithy stories about everyday matters, everyday things that people will see, all kinds of common things. A sower went out to sow. And some of the seed fell on rocky ground and some fell on fertile ground. A man was beaten within an inch of his life and left for dead by the side of a road. A shepherd lost a sheep. A woman lost a coin. A father lost a son. And the people would have their rapt attention on that because they knew those things. They had experienced those things. The Hasidic Jews say that God's creation, we said that we hallow God's creation when we see holy sparks within it. And when Moses turned aside, he said, "Holy smokes." Because he saw holy sparks. For a bush was on fire and it contained the voice of God. Little children did not need a professor to help them see an arrow in FedEx. They saw it as plain as day. Children can spend hours consumed in these little projects. They look under rocks. They climb trees. They collect insects. Every day is an adventure. Well, come to think of it now, that was my childhood. That's how I spent it, and that's how most of you spent it as well. Kids today and a lot of adults don't like to go outside. They prefer the indoors where they can sit glued to HD TVs and computer screens. And tell me how you can learn to appreciate nature or behold God in the ordinary events of life if you're there watching Ice Road Truckers or playing Assassin's Creed on the Xbox. Just as a little sidelight, they have done neurological studies of children who watch about 5 hours of television every day. Their brains are noticeably smaller. But they've also learned that these kids don't like nature. They don't like being outdoors because it's boring. Or because some of them are just afraid. You never know what might happen to you out there, but enough of this topic. It's for another Sunday. Let's get back to the other aspect of children, that children don't distinguish between what is possible and impossible. They don't distinguish between what is real and what is imaginary. Their world isn't split in two. And they have everything that we had before it was educated and talked right out of us. And we were told that we had to stick with reality. And maybe that's one of the reasons Jesus said, "You will not come into the kingdom of heaven unless you come as a child." Madeleine Engel tells the story of friends who welcomed a new baby girl into the world. And when they came home, their 3-year-old toddler was ecstatic to see his new sister. And they'd barely taken their coats off before he was begging to hold his sister. But there was one condition. He had to be alone in the room with her. And they were leery, of course. But they decided to give in, so they put him in a big easy chair, stuffed pillows beside him, laid the baby on the lap, and left the room. And they were just around the corner listening as their son asked the baby, "I've got something really important to ask you. What is God like? I forgot." We once knew, I really believe this, we once knew God, but we forgot. And there are times that we sense we have forgotten something we knew early on. Once we knew who we came from, but we lost our memory and sight with the passage of time. But the hunger is still there. The Swiss psychiatrist, Carl Jung, said that among all my patients in the second half of life, that is, everyone over 35, there has not been one whose problem in the last resort was not finding a religious outlook on life. They just knew. They just hungered for something more. Everyone is looking, whether they know it or not, because bushes still burn, but we won't see them, without turning aside. During my sabbatical in the summer of 2005, some of you know that I spent 3 weeks alone in the wilds of Northwest Ontario. Days would go by and I wouldn't see another boat. And one morning I was out fishing on the outside of this long reed bed when I noticed this rock sticking out of the water. Yeah, big deal, a rock. There are thousands upon thousands of rocks sticking out of the water on this massive lake. But there was something about this one rock that drew my attention. So I started fishing toward the thing, and I could see that it was quite a bit bigger beneath the surface. And the closer I got, the bigger and the bigger this thing got. And I floated over the top of the thing, and the enormity of it absolutely blew me away. I checked my sonar. It went down 80 feet deep, and it could have easily filled the sanctuary. And for some reason, I was in absolute awe of this huge hunk of sandstone. But then I had this weird sensation. It was this feeling almost like I was being pulled out of the boat and down into the water. Have any of you ever been to the Grand Canyon and stood at those observation things and feel like you're being yanked out of there? Maybe it's just me, but wow, that's a disconcerting experience. And I'm standing there, and it's like I'm seeing myself go under, and I'm gliding along the depths until I come right up to the edge, and you could see down 20 feet deep, but then the water turned black, and then I saw myself disappear into the dark. And I was quivering inside, so I thought, I better sit down. And I sat, but I still felt pulled. And I saw myself swimming to the bottom, but I didn't stop there. I kept going. I went through the bottom and down each strata of the earth, further and further, thinking about, what if I reach the core? What's going to happen to me? And it was like I was a one-man China syndrome. And the further I went, this verse from the psalm kept coming to me. Lord, out of the depths I cry to you. And I could continue with that experience, but there wouldn't be any point. You wouldn't understand it. You might say, so what? Big deal. Words can't do it. But I'm going to remember that experience for the rest of my life. I don't know how long it lasted. Maybe it was seconds, or maybe it was minutes. And then I was off to fishing. But I went to a place I'd never been before. Have any of you ever had an experience like that? It is possible, absolutely possible for all of us to have it, and the doorways or the windows are open every day for us to enter. And I can remember, even as I couldn't grasp it, I kept saying out loud, wow, and thank you. Kind of like that title to that newest Anne Lamott book on the three kinds of prayer, help, thanks, and wow. Burning bushes, a verse from the Psalms, a toddler questioning a baby, a placid lake with huge rocks in it, meditating in an empty sanctuary, dreams, nature, evergreen boughs heavy with snow, sunrise, sunset, acts of caring and generosity, a soul-stirring image put on the screen by the youth group, and on it goes. I can't remember the poet who said it, maybe Elizabeth Barron Browning, but she said, the earth is crammed with heaven. God is watching when we turn aside and look and listen and feel God's presence. And I'd now like to leave you with a scene I may have described before. An old man and a boy are sitting next to each other on the bench out at the end of a pier. They're fishing, and the sun is going down. And as the light begins to fade and the reflection is shimmering on the water, the questions get really deep. Grandpa, why does the rain fall? Grandpa, why is the sunset red? Grandpa, why do the seasons change? Why are some people happy and other people are so sad? And then came the zinger. Grandpa, does anyone ever really see God? And there was this pregnant pause, and aged eyes met innocent eyes, and a wrinkled arm came around and rested upon little shoulders, and there was a sigh. And as they looked over the rippling water as the sun just disappeared beneath the tree line, Grandpa said, son, it's getting so I hardly see anything else. Amen.